My name is Keith Lillimo. I'm happy to be chairing what I think will be a very interesting and hopefully informative session. We may see people coming late because of the change in rooms. They must have anticipated a big crowd to put us here, so please move up. There's a tremendous amount of room up here in the front. Before I actually start, I want to make an announcement. This nice lady in front of me has a passport that belongs to a Brazilian citizen by the name of Fabio Hustukai. If you've lost your passport, please come up and pick it up. It could create a problem for you when you want to leave the country. So,
thank you so much.
As I said, my name is Keith Lillimo. I'm from the Mass General Hospital. It's been a pleasure for Boston to host the Clinical Congress. I hope you've all enjoyed your stay here, and I wish you all safe travels as you head back home. The topic of bile duct injuries remains a concern for surgeons. I think we've made a lot of progress over the last 20 years since the operation has been around, but we still have lots of progress to make. We've assembled a panel of three real true experts in the field, each offering a slightly different view on the topic. We'll have three roughly 20-minute presentations and some very informal case presentations. You're certainly welcome during that discussion period to bring up any questions or cases that you have on your own for discussion. Our first speaker is Michael Brunt. Michael is a professor of surgery at Washington University in St. Louis. He is the leader of their minimally invasive surgery division. He's an accomplished minimally invasive surgeon and represented by the fact that he was a recent past president of SAGES. While president of SAGES, he took on the task of defining the SAGES, or leading the SAGES Safe Cholecystectomy Task Force, which has been working now for a couple years to try to do what he can to make this operation safer. Just on Saturday, Mike organized a very well done consensus conference that will hopefully answer a lot of questions that are associated with the safe performance of this operation in many different settings, and I hope he will share some of that information with you for his talk entitled Bile Duct Injuries, Incidence, Etiology, and Prevention. Michael?
Thank you very much, Dr. Lillimo, for organizing this session and for asking me to be a part of it. This is my disclosure slide. The only relevant disclosure is that I chair and started the SAGES Safe Cholecystectomy Task Force. I don't receive any remuneration for that, but a lot of what you hear today will have come out of that effort. So it's been just over 30 years since laparoscopic cholecystectomy was first introduced and really triggered the entire laparoscopic revolution that changed the face of surgery. As you all know, despite the tremendous benefits of the laparoscopic removal of the gallbladder over open cholecystectomy, there was a problem that arose as a generation of surgeons learned how to do this operation. And that problem was that there was an uptick in the incidence of bile duct injuries. So where do we stand today, almost 30 years later? These are a series of studies that were published over the last 5 years looking at the incidence of bile duct injury in large populations. Most of these are administrative database studies, with the exception being the Tornquist study, which is a Swedish prospective national registry that captures over 90% of all cholecystectomies in that country. And in most of these, the incidence of major bile duct injury has been in the 0.2 to 0.4% range, or is up about 0.3%. And then the Tornquist study, the total incidence of biliary complications was 1.5%, counting minor injuries and biliary leaks. Now, that may not seem like a very high percentage of complications, but when you multiply it over the number of cholecystectomies that are done in the U.S. and worldwide annually, it's a substantial number of patients that are impacted by this problem. This also impacts surgeons. This is a little bit older data, but it was from a survey of over 4,000 surgeons from the American College of Surgeons. 1,400 completed the survey, and 38% reported being the primary surgeon for biliary injury, and 13% had more than one injury. So this impacts a lot of surgeons as well. What about the impact on patients? There's numerous reinterventions, hospitalizations, early and late complications, higher mortality, both short and long term. And various studies have estimated the increased mortality rate to be 8.8% above that of what would be expected for one's age. And this results in significant economic health care burden with over $1 billion in associated health costs in the U.S. Bile duct injuries negatively impact quality of life. This is a recent study that was published in the Annals of Surgery from the Netherlands. They reviewed 800 bile duct injury patients at a tertiary center over many years, compared them to 175 uncomplicated lap coli patients. The BDI-related mortality was 3.5%, and patients that had a bile duct injury reported significantly worse quality of life and loss of productivity. You can see the impact on survival that's shown in the graphs on the right, both by gender and according to ASA class. And these patients report a higher rate of disability, 34% versus 19.6 in the lap coli group. These are from a couple of patient blogs. This was given to me by Dana Tellum, who's also on the Safe Coli Task Force. And if you go out there, you can find some of these comments that patients have made. And I'll just highlight a couple of them. The first one, I spent almost 3 months, 9 procedures in reconstructive surgery. And then the one on the bottom, this cost us $300,000 in medical bills with no insurance. We lost our home, 10 acres of land. Okay, both of these patients have filed lawsuits. And I think it's important for everyone to recognize that a bile duct injury is the most common reason that general surgeons are sued. These are from two studies over 10 different years of a number of cases that were reviewed that came to litigation. You can see the majority of lap coli cases were from bile duct injuries, but there were a significant number of bowel and vascular injuries, probably related to the initial laparoscopic access. And importantly, a high percentage of these injuries were missed at the time of diagnosis. So that takes us to today. This is a problem that has not gone away, despite talking about it for the last 20 plus years. And so this is what really led us to form this consensus conference panel. We met this past Saturday. And this was an effort, a collaborative effort between SAGES, the America's HPB Association, International HPB Association, SSAT, and the European Association of Endoscopic Surgery. So really a lot of different perspectives that came into this. And the conference goals were identify optimal strategies for bile duct injury prevention during cholecystectomy and to develop and disseminate evidence-based practice guidelines. Those are going to be forthcoming. There's still some additional work to do on that. I'm not going to go into the specifics of the guidelines today, but you'll be seeing more about that. But we've done a lot of background work on the Safe Cholecystectomy Task Force. This is the logo. I would love someday to see you all wearing one of these pins. And really, the mission of this group has been to enhance a universal culture of safety for cholecystectomy to minimize the risk of biliary and other injuries. This work was started using an expert Delphi consensus process where we surveyed surgeons for critical factors for safe surgical practice in cholecystectomy. It was reviewed by 160 SAGES committee members, and key domains were identified. The initial output from that is that we developed this six-step program of things surgeons can do now that we think will make this operation safer. And again, you'll be hearing more detail as the results from the consensus come out. So let's just start first with understand and apply the critical view of safety. So why does a classical bile duct injury happen? It is basically a misperception injury in which the surgeon thinks he or she is looking at the cystic duct when in reality they're looking at the common bile duct. And it's also true that the right hepatic artery can be injured when the common bile duct is cut. And I think when we all started doing this operation, most everyone was doing what's called the infundibulum technique. You dissect around the cystic duct, see it going up into the gallbladder. If you see the flare, you're there. But there's an inherent potential deception in this technique in which the surgeon thinks he or she is seeing the cystic duct when in reality it's the bile duct. And that's shown on the right-hand side where you can see if the bile duct is tethered or fused or there's a lot of fatty tissue around it, you can miss it. So what is the critical view? I am at the institution where Steve Strasburg described the critical view of safety. There are three elements. I think oftentimes there's a misunderstanding of what it is. And those three elements are that the hepatocystic triangle is cleared of all the fat and fibrous tissue. The lower third of the gallbladder is separated from the liver bed to expose that lower cystic plate. And there are only two structures entering the gallbladder. Now, there can occasionally be a separate cystic artery branch or the cystic artery bifurcates, but those are the basic principles of the critical view of safety. And why is this used? Well, because it mimics the technique that was used when we were doing these open. You would isolate the cystic duct and artery and then take the gallbladder completely off the liver bed till it was only attached by two structures. And then you knew that you were safe. So I'm going to show this video, which I think illustrates some of this principle. So there are a couple of things that you notice right off the bat. First of all, there's some extra clips that are there. Secondly, the surgeon is working close to the duodenum. Now he is isolating the cystic duct. And this is a very experienced surgeon, by the way. So isolated two structures. There's no critical view. You see a little bit of plexus on that ductal structure that's there. And see how close you are to the duodenum. So fortunately in this case, a cholangiogram is done. And you also see there's a lot of cephalad retraction on that neck of the gallbladder. So the cholangiogram's done, and contrast is seen going only distally. There's no proximal contrast into the duodenum. If you see this on imaging, you cannot ignore it. You cannot assume that it's just positional or whatever. You can't leave the OR like that. So then he goes back, dissects further up, right up by the gallbladder. You can see the cystic duct lymph node that's right there. That's a key landmark for where you should be dissecting, and then isolates this higher up, puts a clip on it, reshoots the cholangiogram, and then sees more of the normal anatomy, and primarily repairs that duct. But when you've dissected around it like that and applied those clips, you're really a setup for a late stricture. So how are we doing with the critical view of safety? This is a study from the Netherlands where they looked at over 1,100 consecutive lap colis. And the overall biliary injury rate was 1.7%. Again, that's reasonably high. 0.6% were major bile duct injuries. So they had videos from 75 cases with complications. They looked at them in detail. 80% said they did the critical view. But when they looked at the video, they only found the critical view in 11%. And there wasn't good agreement between the operative notes and the video. And importantly, in none of the patients who had biliary injuries was the critical view reached. So I think what that says is that if you do the critical view, that should be protective, number one. Number two, I think there's a misconception of exactly what it is. It's those three elements I've talked about, and we as a surgical community need to do a better job of understanding and implementing into practice the critical view of safety. And that's one of the recommendations that will come out of the consensus. This is another study led by Adnan Al-Saidi at Virginia Mason. They took 160 surgical videos that were out on the internet, publicly available, took a section right before clipping or cutting, and then they used crowdsourcing as well as experts to rate the critical view. This was rated on a 1 to 6 scale. 5 or 6 is a really good score. 1 or 2 is a terrible score. And the average CVS score was 3.6. And only 12.5% of videos rated a CVS score of 5 or greater. So there's much room for improvement. The second step is understand aberrant anatomy. This can include a lot of different things, short cystic duct, right, aberrant hepatic ducts, right hepatic artery crosses anterior to the common bile duct. And there's some anatomic clues that I think we haven't paid enough attention to. One is Ruvier's sulcus. So Ruvier's sulcus is this fissure in the liver, which marks the plane of the common bile duct and the porta hepatis. The dissection should always stay anterior ventral to the plane of Ruvier's sulcus. And then, as you all know, extrahepatic biliary anomalies are common. low insertion of the right bile duct, aberrant right hepatic duct. There can be a superficial duct immediately deep to the liver bed, parallel cystic duct, etc. You have to really understand and appreciate these. Step three is make liberal use of cholangiography or other means of intraoperative biliary imaging. This may be especially important in difficult cases or unclear anatomy. This is also a recommendation that will come from the consensus. There is some controversy over where that reduces the incidence of biliary injury, but most studies show that it appears to, and certainly it helps you recognize intraoperatively if there's a problem. So this is a meta-analysis that we did from the consensus. This is 14 large studies, mostly of administrative data, over 2.5 million cholecystectomies. There is moderate to high risk of bias. And the odds ratio for IOC versus no IOC in biliary injury generally favored IOC, although there was a little overlap crossing to the midline. And then this is a second meta-analysis we did of IOC versus no IOC and the diagnosis of BDI intraoperatively. And virtually all of these studies are to the right of the midline. So the odds ratio favors use of IOC for diagnosis intraoperatively if you suspect a problem. There's a lot of interest in infrared, near-infrared fluorescent cholangiography. It was a study that was presented on Monday by Raul Rosenthal's group of over 600 patients in a prospective randomized trial, which suggests that this allows earlier recognition of the anatomy of the cystic duct and the common bile duct. I think there's a little bit of technique involved in it in terms of timing and dosing. You can see the bile duct is right down here in this lower right corner. Here's the gallbladder. A lot of background fluorescence in this particular case. And I've anecdotally found it helpful in some of the difficult cases that I've done. And the nice thing about it is that you can go back and forth between white light and infrared, near infrared, as many times as you want during the case. Step four is perform an intraoperative timeout. Maybe timeout's not the best terminology, but a pause or stop point. So just step back for a moment and look and make sure what you're looking at is the actual anatomy. Because we know that we get locked into thinking things are one way when they're really not. And I think that video that I showed you is a good example. So just before you clip and cut and take the gallbladder out, just step back for a moment. If you have a partner or a colleague or a resident or, do we agree we've got the critical view, and then move forward. And then step five is the difficult cholecystectomy, in particular recognizing when the dissection is approaching a zone of risk and stop before you get through there. These contracted shrunken gallbladders, biliary inflammatory infusion or severe acute cholecystitis, and finish the operation by another means rather than a total cholecystectomy. We know what a lot of the risk factors are: morbid obesity, acute cholecystitis, severe chronic cholecystitis, Maritzi syndrome, cirrhosis. Those are the ones to be a little bit extra careful. So this is a study that was published a few years ago from Belgium. It's a prospective study of almost 1,100 patients with acute cholecystitis operated on by 53 surgeons. The vast majority were done laparoscopic, but some were open. Conversion rates were 11%, twice as high in males and females, because they usually come in with more complicated gallstone disease. And they had a 1.2% incidence of biliary injury. So if you look at the successful lap coli group on the left, the bile duct injury rate was 0.4%, what I've told you earlier. 1.4% bile leaks, total 1.9%. But look what happened to the lap converted to open. There were 116 of those. The bile duct injury rate was 6%, bile leaks 7.7%, total biliary complications almost 14%. And four of the injuries occurred before, but three after conversion to open cholecystectomy. So converting to open cholecystectomy may not always be the best option in the difficult case. And I think that may be especially true over the last 10 years because the current generation of trainees and graduates is coming out with very little open cholecystectomy experience. And so that brings to the final point, step six: get help for difficult cases. If the dissection stalled, you can't get the CVS, anatomy's unclear, other conditions difficult, if it's available, call for help. So what do you do when the critical view can't be reached? Well, there's a rare situation when you can't see the gallbladder, and you're probably off backing out and sending that patient elsewhere. I had a case last year that a surgeon put a scope in, couldn't see the gallbladder, it was all socked in, backed out to his credit. Came back 2 or 3 months later, did the same thing, still couldn't see the gallbladder, backed out, and finally sent the patient. And it was a very difficult cholecystectomy, although we were able to do it. But I really give credit to him for for doing that. If you can only see the dome of the gallbladder and it's just too bad, you can always put a surgical cholecystostomy tube in, drain it, come back and fight that battle later. And then finally, the more common scenario is you can get to the hepatocystic triangle, but you just can't safely dissect it. And that's when we think doing a subtotal cholecystectomy makes sense. So we published a paper in the Journal of American College 2 years ago describing the terminology a little bit better around this operation. There are two types, fenestrating and reconstituting. The reconstituting, you basically close off the neck of the gallbladder. You want to open the gallbladder below, above the hepatocystic triangle a little bit, get all the stones out, and then the preference is to do a fenestrating, which is on the right, which leaves that neck of the gallbladder open, and then you should leave a drain in. You can leave the back wall of the gallbladder or take it out, whichever you prefer, and always put a drain in, okay? Now, this is a retrospective study that was done from, again, from the Netherlands of 191 patients. They categorized the gallbladders, the subtotal cholecystectomies by fenestrating or reconstituting. There's a higher bioleak rate in the fenestrating than reconstituting, but a higher rate of recurrent biliary symptoms in reconstituting than fenestrating. And there was just one bioleak injury in the reconstituting group. So, and the pictures on the right kind of illustrate sort of what this looks like. So this is where you've left, there's this cuff of gallbladder down here, and you've left this open, leave a drain in. I've actually removed two remnant gallbladders after prior subtotal cholecystectomies over the last year, and both of those were done open, interestingly. We removed them laparoscopically, but the original procedure was open. So then, finally, what if you're in there and you highly suspect or confirm you've got a biliary injury? I think principle number one is get help. If you're not experienced with biliary reconstruction, avoid converting to open just to try to sort things out, because it can make things more difficult subsequently. You put a drain in, call an HPB expert, and transfer the patient. This is a recommendation that is coming forth strongly from the consensus meeting. And just realize if you've injured the bile duct, then you become very emotionally invested in that. It gets hard. It's hard to think straight. You're thinking about all the downstream effects, et cetera. And just if you have a biliary expert, expert in biliary reconstructing in your institution, call that person, get them in there. And if not, you're probably better off just putting a drain in, leaving the gallbladder in situ, and referring the patient. So there will be more coming out from this consensus conference. We're going to have a period where the guidelines will be publicly posted and available for comment on this website at preventbdi.org. They're not out there yet, but they will be in the next couple of weeks. And I would encourage you to go to that, take a look, and provide us with some comment and feedback. And then finally, we have a series of modules that have just gone live from the Safe Cholecystectomy Task Force on enhancing safety. These are freely available. Anyone can create an account and go in and review these. These are the different topics. I think you'll find a lot of useful information in there that will hopefully help you all make this operation a little bit safer. Thank you very much.